Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And this evening we have with us Bill Sardi, who is a health journalist, a health researcher, and we're going to be talking about vitamin C. Now, when I went through medical school, why, they didn't emphasize vitamins very much. They told us if we ate a well-balanced diet, why, we got all the vitamins we needed. And when Linus Pauling came along some years later and was talking about how beneficial vitamin C was to prevent colds or even for the treatment of serious diseases and even for the treatment of cancer, why, he was ridiculed and laughed out and pointed out that just because he had a couple of Nobel Prizes didn't mean he knew anything about medicine, because, after all, we were much smarter than he was. And through the years, though, many people have used vitamin C, and they seem to feel that it really has helped them. And now there's some amazing new studies that have come out, which tend to vindicate so much of what Linus Pauling said. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Bill Sardi. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Great to be with you, Dr. Stan. And, of course, a very alarming report we're getting from England regarding vitamin C, a new book out by some professors there, and saying the recommended daily allowance for vitamin C is completely fabricated, bogus. We've been told all this time, don't take too much vitamin C, especially because you're just wasting your money. Of course, it's just excreted out in the urine. You're getting no value of it. You can't get the blood levels up beyond a certain point. It now turns out researchers at Manchester University in England showing this is all false, always has been false, has been a complete fabrication by the National Institutes of Health. And, of course, the recommended daily allowance for vitamin C is, of course, now to be questioned. The researchers knew this earlier this year. They published papers showing it was possible to raise the blood levels 3 times greater concentration than had been reported before. This was from the National Institutes of Health researchers themselves. Instead of being forthcoming and saying, you know, we've been able to do something that we said couldn't be done, instead of saying we need a new dietary allowance, instead of saying we need to reevaluate this, they weren't forthcoming. And, of course, now these pharmacology doctors, Steve Hickey and Hillary Roberts from Manchester University of England, they have a new book. And, of course, they're telling everyone, disclosing the whole scenario of events as this has occurred. And, of course, it's going to just totally destroy the credibility the government has in the area of vitamins, dietary supplements, and so on.
Well, what is vitamin C good for? What does it actually do? And how should people be taking it?
Of course, vitamin C is such a wonderful key vitamin in the body. And just to understand its importance and why we need more than the diet. I know everyone says, but didn't God make it so just we could get enough out of our foods? It turned out God made us to make our own vitamin C. We once made vitamin C, like most of the animals except the fruit bats and the guinea pigs and a few of the monkeys. So what happens is that we don't make vitamin C anymore. We used to make, we think, a billy goat makes about the same size of a human, 160 pounds, makes 13,000 milligrams of vitamin C on its own. It turns its blood sugar into vitamin C. That's how it's made. In an enzymatic process, we have a gene that's faulty, doesn't make the last enzyme anymore, so we don't make this. Every human is a mutant. We believe this is why this explains the declining longevity, as we explained it in the Bible. The Bible said people lived 900 years and so on, and then, of course, later on, the human lifespan eventually declined. This would have been a progressive gene mutation. And so now humans need to make this up completely from the diet. And, of course, the best we can do from the diet is 100 or 200 milligrams. National Institutes of Health said don't take more than 200 milligrams after that. It's all lost in the urine. Now we know, the researchers telling us, as far as dosage, it might help us to get as much for healthy adults, maybe a lot more for people that are ill, but for healthy adults, 2,500 milligrams a day in divided doses. That is, take 500 milligrams and 3 or 4 hours later take another 500. Even if you can't take that much, take 250 milligrams, but take it in divided doses. This is like Linus Pauling told us to do. It's mimicking what the body used to do, which is, you know, make it as the day goes along. The liver used to make this. And, of course, so there's our dosage answer. As far as what vitamin C does, we're trying to write down all the things that would have happened had people known to supplement with vitamin C pills. And, of course, cataracts would have almost disappeared. Aortic aneurysms, a major threat to human life. This is the aorta, the first blood vessel outside the heart, which weakens and then could burst. And, of course, vitamin C is making collagen through the body. This is all the goo, the connective tissue between the cells, the mortar between the bricks. And, of course, everything gets stronger. One of our problems is blood vessels get kind of floppy as we get older. Then we get blood clots. Then we get poor circulation, and we get all the other problems that we get. So the connective tissue is a barrier against the spread of disease, particularly the spread of cancer, particularly the spread of infection. So this is how vitamin C works. Vitamin C reactivates another antioxidant in the body called glutathione. It's key to everything. It helps you maintain your vitamin E levels because it protects vitamin E from oxidizing. Those folks who are smart enough to take some vitamin C supplements every day will have a blood level of histamine, about 40% lower histamine than other adults who just get their vitamin C from foods. This is important because histamine sets you up for the allergy reactions and so on that you may have. So very important that you begin to think, I'm not going to just get my vitamin C out of foods, because it never reconnects us, never rebalances the body with the amount we once had when we made it on our own. So very important to understand dosage. If you want it to be kind of time-released naturally in the body, then the more bioflavonoids, these come from the citrus rind and berries and cherries and grapes, the more of those you include with your vitamin C, the slower it goes into the system. And it kind of makes it a time-release system. So these are just little things to learn about vitamin C. Very, very important. And understand, just in the area of cataracts alone, we think that it would just almost eliminate cataracts as we know them, blinding cataracts, because it would only have to delay cataracts by 10 years. Then most of us might not even be on the planet, as you can understand. So people get this in their 60s and 70s. Of course, the other question is, would we live longer if we took vitamin C pills? One study showed if we could get somewhere about 300 milligrams or more of vitamin C a day, this would require supplements for the most part. This was a UCLA study in 1992. At least males would live 6 years longer. Now, that's quite a increase in the human lifespan. Of course, we think if we could actually take it all day long, as Dr. Linus Pauling did, he took 6,000 milligrams a day, 6 grams, sometimes more when he was ill. And if we did that, we might live a lot longer. Certainly Linus Pauling didn't catch up to this till later in life, but did do it and did outlive most males by 2 decades. So, it's just something that we need to understand. The new book out is by Dr. Steve Hickey and Hillary Roberts. Steve Hickey and Hillary Roberts. They're from Manchester, England. The book is called Ascorbate, A-S-C-O-R-B-A-T-E. You can learn about the book and my information, this whole story that's unfolding, by going to my website at askbillsardi.com. I'm not selling the book. I'm just trying to promote it to anybody that's interested. But all the information is at my website, askbillsardi.com, including my wonderful report that we just finished, The Vitamin C Fanatics were right all along. And, of course, just trying to tell everybody that these folks that have been taking vitamin C have been doing something wonderful for their bodies. I know for so many people, they almost hide their vitamin pills when they go to the doctor. They don't tell them they take vitamin C. They get kind of funny glances from friends if they tell them they swallow high doses of vitamin C. Turns out, after 10 years, of people taking vitamin C pills, you'll see far less cataracts and brain disease and all manner of other problems, so allergies and so on. In fact, people don't realize that a very, very high dose of vitamin C, like 10,000 milligrams all at one time, will quell most, you know, allergy outbreaks, where if you're really having, you know, an allergy attack, just go get some powdered vitamin C, put it in some water, and down it. And because it just tremendously decreases histamine in the blood. So it's very important for us to learn about vitamin C, only because God made us to make our own. We eventually had a genetic flaw. We're all mutants now. We don't make the vitamin C we once made. And by the way, vitamin C, the way the animals do this, the way humans used to do it, is when humans or animals are under stress, they release their sugar stores and their fat stores into the bloodstream, so they get instant energy to flee whatever danger is lurking. Well, then, of course, that increased blood sugar in the bloodstream would go to the liver and convert to vitamin C. Man has lost that ability. So under stress, humans release sugar and fat into the bloodstream. That becomes high cholesterol and diabetes as we know it. But man has lost the ability to control that. We used to make vitamin C that would counter all of this from our blood sugar. Now we don't anymore. So you can see that humans are more prone to stress in kind of like the post-Noah's flood era, because it seems like all of this occurred after Noah's flood. There must have been some sort of bottleneck in the human genome, that is, where there were only a few people, and they transferred this to the rest of humanity. In the Bible, it says there were only 8 people left in the time of Noah and his family. And then this would have been when there would have been a genetic bottleneck, and then it could have been transferred. So it's interesting the Bible correlates with all this. They believe that ancient mariners way long ago were able to travel the oceans because they made their own vitamin C. They wouldn't get scurvy. But now today we know, of course, you'd have to have vitamin C. We're completely dependent upon the diet for it. And, of course, we just cannot make up for it. Our diet provides us a paltry 100 milligrams or so. And the best diet, will 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, if you eat the right ones, would give you a couple of 100 milligrams of vitamin C. That's certainly paltry next to what Dr. Hickey and Roberts are telling us. If you're healthy, you need 2,500 milligrams. You may need a lot more. The human body may be made as much as 13,000 milligrams a day long ago, early in man's history. And, of course, it's just something for all of us to understand. It's all in the book by Hickey and Roberts, and you can learn how to order that book. It's a downloaded book. It costs $6 on the Internet, or you can, of course, order a softcover book. It's on Amazon.com elsewhere also. So I'm just volunteering to help promote the book and make sure that Americans learn about this. And, of course, we're calling on our congressman to completely demand from the National Institutes of Health a scientific substantiation for their recommended dietary allowance for vitamin C, which has been set at 75 milligrams for men, 90 milligrams for females, another 35 milligrams added for smokers. And, of course, all of this was under the caveat that don't take more than 200 milligrams, it's a waste of time. You can't boost your blood levels beyond what they call about 70 micromole concentration. Now that NIH, National Institutes of Health, does its own study and increases the blood levels way above the 70 level, all the way to 220 micromole concentration, that's 3 times greater. And, of course, all of this is out now. You're not wasting your money. You're not wasting your time. It's not being excreted in the urine. It's going into your tissues. And, by the way, the whole thing is false because they're measuring blood levels. And, of course, the brain has 10 times greater concentration than the blood. The eyes 2 or 3 times. The adrenals many more times. So it's the tissue levels that count. Back in 1991, a study showed that you could take the saturation levels of vitamin C, 148 milligrams a day, and then if you increased it to 2,000 milligrams a day, the concentration of vitamin C in the eye would increase about 32%. And it's very important to understand, because the human eye is subjected to sunlight and so on, and it needs more vitamin C for protection. So that's how we get the cataracts and so on. So What's unraveling here is Drs. Hickey and Roberts, the University of Manchester, England pharmacology professors, breaking ranks from the scientific community. They've been discussing with our Institutes of Medicine, the National Institutes of Health, for 1 year, demanding that they change their recommended dietary allowance. When they stonewalled them, when they wouldn't return their emails, when they wouldn't go for any reforms and weren't forthcoming, these doctors wrote a book. It's all online. You can read the whole story. Our government has essentially fabricated the RDA. What they did was the big error. Vitamin C has a half-life. That is, it disappears from the body. Half of it will be gone in a certain amount of time. The half-life for vitamin C is 30 minutes. The government researchers completely ignored the half-life and measured the peak concentration in the bloodstream for vitamin C 12 hours or 24 half-lives after people consume vitamin C pills and said that's all you can get. That's the highest concentration you can get. Of course, it's a fabrication. And this is why they're showing us, since it dissipates from the body quickly, you need to, of course, take some on a regular basis in a time-divided doses through the day. And by the way, you certainly may have an increased need for vitamin C if you're ill, if you're taking certain medications like steroids, aspirin, estrogen replacement, birth control pills. These are some of the common ones. If you're a diabetic, if you're a smoker, if you're an athlete, if you're pregnant, if you're growing, you need to build collagen. All of these are reasons to have more than the RDA. Now, I know all the consumers, they go out, turn a bottle of vitamin C around, and it turns out that it says 100% of the recommended dietary allowance. That's 75 milligrams or 60 milligrams, it might say. Well, that makes it sound like that's all you need, but you're probably not on the list of just being perfectly healthy. I don't know who is. So it's misleading. I've called for a congressman to put an asterisk by the RDA now, and it says for healthy adults only. This amount was only established for healthy adults. If you're pregnant, a growing child, if you're a smoker, et cetera, you may need more than this, get more information. So certainly we understand that according to the research that's been done by epidemiologists, these are people who study human populations, that when you compare the people who have low concentrations of vitamin C in their bloodstream, if they increase the blood levels to the points we're talking about you can achieve with vitamin C pills, you'd lower the risk for cancer by 62%, the risk for heart disease by 55%. Not just those diseases, I mean the mortality, the death rates from cancer and heart disease. What a tragedy this has been since 1976. Linus Pauling has been trying to tell us since 1992, the National Institutes of Health belittling all the people who took vitamin C pills. It's a fraud, if anything. And certainly we need to call to take to task these researchers. We need to get a hold of our congressman. We paid for all this research. It's been fabricated. It's not proper science. The researchers making us aware of this now. And, of course, it's unequivocal. It's all out for you to see. You can go to the reports yourself and read them. I try to provide them to you at my website, askbillsardi.com. Understand that so many people who listen to you, Dr. Stan, are trying to fight some onerous trade laws called Codex, where they're trying to establish the minimum and maximum amount of vitamins we can put in vitamin pills. That Codex legislation would completely become unraveled, could completely be blocked, because it's all established on the RDA or the recommended dietary allowance. Once people find out it's all fabricated on vitamin C, the whole thing will unravel. So we need to get this whole story out to the American public. They're paying a terrible price for not knowing.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Bill. And the problem is that whenever you rely upon government to give you information, you have to realize that many times the people who work for government also are getting a nice stipend from the drug companies or from someone else. They're giving you all sorts of reasons not to be taking vitamin C. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about some of those reasons that are given, and I think they're all faulty. We'll be right back in just a moment here with Bill Sardi. Well, our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and certainly one of the people who supports our program. And Bill, one of the things that is said often, well, you know, if you take too much vitamin C, you're going to get kidney stones, you're going to get bladder stones. And so, after all, if you just take too much vitamin C, it's you're just going to have very, very expensive urine. You're just going to excrete this all. And, of course, it isn't absorbed. The body will only absorb a certain amount, and that's this very limited amount that we're suggesting. How do you counter that argument?
Well, of course, this is one of the fabrications, again, from the National Institutes of Health Sciences. When they did their studies, they did note an increase of oxalate. That is, this is something that you kind of get concerned about for kidney stones. However, they never did point out that blood levels weren't telling you whether you're getting rid of the oxalate or adding more to the system. Obviously, you were getting rid of it because, as subsequent studies have shown out, this is Carol Johnson, Arizona State, a lifelong researcher in vitamin C, showing us that the false notion that you take vitamin C and it causes kidney stones, that's just totally some sort of a myth. It's not backed by science. We have 6 or 7 studies showing that high doses of vitamin C protect against kidney stones and bladder stones. Another myth is it might cause iron overload because vitamin C helps us increase our iron absorption from foods, but that's only on an as-needed basis. It's never caused iron overload or what we call hemochromatosis. Another myth is that it causes something, high doses of vitamin C cause something we call rebound scurvy, and that is, since you're taking such high doses and so much is being excreted, this is the myth, that then if you stop taking those high-dose pills, your body is kind of in an excretion mode, and now you'll really go into scurvy because you're just constantly excreting and not holding on to it. Of course, that's bogus, too. Where they came up with these things, Carol Johnson, Arizona State University, lifelong researcher, has dispelled all this in a long paper in Nutrition Reviews. It was published a few years back. But she has been telling us that a significant portion of the American population, believe it or not, has scurvy. Now, the recommended dietary allowance is intended to make sure that 97 to 98% of the population does not have a deficiency disease. And yet we see from college students, not just the elderly who don't absorb vitamin C very well, but from college students and others, that a significant percentage, maybe as much as 12 or 13%, have true overt signs of scurvy, and maybe 42% all totaled or either have signs of scurvy or marginal vitamin C. Want to think twice? Maybe it's you. Listen to these symptoms. If you have scurvy, you've got bleeding gums, you've got hemorrhaging, you've got black and blue marks, you've got swelling in the back of your eyes, you may have peripheral vascular disease where you're walking and your feet hurt in older people. You often see, Dr. Stan, didn't you see a lot of older people in your office with those black and blue marks on the back of their hand? We call ecchymoses. And, of course, you see them in the grocery store and so on, as older folks have them. Their blood vessels are brittle because they don't have the collagen. They're weak in vitamin C. It's the first thing you would give when you see something like this. Doctors see this in their offices all the time. Not one hint of recommending vitamin C. There are other signs in your skin. We call them petechia, little pinpoint red spots and so on. Many, many people have these, particularly the bleeding gums is a constant. Even cataracts at an early age is another sign. So we think diarrhea.
Hold that thought there for just a minute, Bill. We got to bring our other stations back online here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, many years ago, when they had our big square rig ships, sailing ships, and men were at sea for long periods of time, they developed scurvy due to vitamin C deficiencies, and so on, certainly in the English Navy, why they gave them limes or lemons, and that's why they called the British sailors limeys, because they took limes and they used them regularly simply to counter the influence of vitamin C deficiency, because if you're not eating lots of fruits and vegetables, you're going to get scurvy. So Bill is just carrying this over to some of the people in our society, especially older people, who are just not eating a well-balanced diet and are getting signs of vitamin C deficiency. You want to pick up the story there, Bill?
Well, certainly we've just been so brainwashed with this idea that fruits and vegetables, there's nothing wrong there. There certainly isn't. Even the National Cancer Institute now saying the 5 servings or the 200 milligrams of vitamin C is not enough. We need 9 servings a day. That would put us at 350, 400 milligrams of vitamin C a day. Again, all of that would never make up for this genetic flaw where we really need maybe a few thousand milligrams. Now, don't get intimidated by the thousands number. About 1,100 milligrams of vitamin C and just a quarter teaspoon of powdered vitamin C. Want to do something cheap? Just buy vitamin C in powdered form. A whole year's supply, taking 2,500 milligrams a day, would cost you $91. I looked it up, so people could find this. It's not going to be expensive. It's the best health insurance you could buy. There's so many things, as we're making the list here of disorders and things that there would be, far less of if we would just be taking this much vitamin C to make up for this genetic flaw. As people should understand it, animals live a long time with healthy blood vessels, no blood clots, none of these diseases and things that we see in humans. They live in the wild virtually without doctors and veterinarians, and they do quite well. It's because they have inborn vitamin C. All the deer and the cattle and the dogs and the cats and so on are doing this. Now, where we get the idea that people may live far longer if they're taking vitamin C through the day comes from our study of animals. Animals live 12 to 18 times longer than the age that they physically mature at. So humans mature at about age 18 physically, fully grown, and live about three and a half times longer, in other words, about 60, 70 years. So what if humans lived 18 times 18? You understand we're getting at a pretty big number there. We're certainly getting into hundreds of years. You see, if humans lived when they made vitamin C, they probably lived for hundreds of years. My gosh, that's what the Book of Genesis is telling us. Maybe humans, long ago, when they produced their own vitamin C, did live, did achieve super longevity. And, of course, that's part of the story. Maybe this was all true. Certainly we have evidence of this. We found a gene in the liver that's no longer works. It's dysfunctional, a defective gene. They call it a pseudogene now. And it doesn't make this last enzyme to convert vitamin C in our liver. So with this understanding, I don't know how we get these. In the last 3 or 4 years, there have been these scare stories about vitamin C. One of them just in the last month was that from the University of North Carolina communicated with the researchers themselves, and they did an animal study and said when they gave animals high doses of vitamin C, they seemed to have worse knee arthritis of the knee. But I challenged them and said, how could that be? Because the animals make far more vitamin C, and they don't get arthritis. In fact, they don't seem to have the disease at all. And in fact, there was a human study that showed that people who take vitamin C supplements, like a couple thousand milligrams a day, had 3 times reduced risk, 300% less chance of acquiring arthritis of the knee and other joints. And so with a human study that had been published, this little animal study made worldwide headlines. It didn't make any sense. Back here a couple of years ago, in the year 2001, Science Magazine from University of Pennsylvania researchers reported that high doses of vitamin C beyond the recommended dietary allowance might damage your DNA. And, of course, this was a worldwide headline. It was released on a holiday weekend, on a Friday. The researcher who captained this whole false report conveniently left the country and went to England, where we couldn't drill him with any kind of questions. And, of course, this stood in the news media. It was completely a falsehood. I wrote Science Magazine. They published my letter and said this was a falsehood. There were 5 human studies showing vitamin C in high doses does not cause genetic damage to humans.
So, and I think the interesting thing is there seems to be almost an organized effort to depreciate or deprecate the use of vitamins, and yet I will tell you that the people who use them seem to be a great deal healthier than the average individual. Eating the fast food diet of modern day America, we're going to be back in just a few moments with Bill Soddy. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. We're talking about a vitamin C. We're talking about really the advantage of taking a vitamin C, and certainly certain other of the vitamins can be very, very beneficial. Certainly vitamin E is a very, very valuable adjunct. In fact, I was just at a conference today where they were talking about how if you took vitamin E, why you had a lower incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And it seems more and more people are saying, this is one of the few things you can take to prevent Alzheimer's disease, or if you do have Alzheimer's disease, perhaps to slow down its progression. So these vitamins do have a very definite effect, and the doctors have been told for many years by their medical schools and at their meetings and their journals that only quacks and cranks use vitamins. But remember, the meetings and most of the medical journals are subsidized by the drug companies. They'd much rather you were taking their medicines than taking something as simple, elementary, and cheap and inexpensive as vitamins. So pick up the story from there, Bill.
Well, understand, QuackWatch, you can go online at quackwatch.com, and they simply say how to figure out who is really a health quack. And they said one of the signs is they are people who advocate, you know, that the RDA, the recommended dietary allowance for vitamins, is too low. That's how you'll spot a health quack. Well, they're going to have to eat this. I don't know what it means now. I mean, this goes the exact opposite way. These people weren't quacks. They were telling us something that's absolutely now been found to be true, and the rest has been a fabrication. As frequently as stated, here's a quote from online that's frequently used. Vitamin hucksters spend millions promoting fear that you're not getting enough vitamins and minerals. They recommend vitamin, mineral, and nutritional supplements as vitamin insurance. The American Dietetic Association, the National Academy of Sciences, and the National Research Council and other major medical societies all agree that you should get the vitamins and minerals you need through a well-balanced diet. Of course, even the AMA came out here a couple, 3 years ago saying that isn't true. We probably all need to take a multivitamin. There's just too many shortages and problems with the American diet and the fast foods and the fact that we really don't eat as we should. So, you know, this has just got to be thrown out the door, but we somehow linger with these same kind of thinking. We never seem to get rid of it. This is what Dr. Hickey and Roberts in England pointed out. The NIH was not forthcoming. They didn't send out retractions about their earlier papers. They didn't call for a new recommended dietary allowance for vitamin C based on this new research that we can obtain blood levels three times greater than ever thought to be achieved before.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We're going to have to pull our other stations in here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our special guest this evening is Bill Sardi. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And as many of you know, I practice medicine. Well, I had my 50th anniversary of my graduation from medical school here, about 2 years ago, so I've been in the medical field for a long period of time. And I remember when we were told, give women estrogens, it's going to protect them from breast cancer. It's going to protect them from all sorts of diseases, it's going to protect their bones. And then, of course, eventually people began to realize that we weren't necessarily protecting them from breast cancer and never getting endometrial cancers. And then we're finding out that estrogens really are harmful. And if you look at some of the studies on women, why, it doesn't protect them from heart disease necessarily at all. And then, of course, I can remember when the normal cholesterol level was 230. But when the drug companies got into it, after all, since most people had a cholesterol of less than 230, they had to get it down to less than 200 or 180 or 150 to sell their cholesterol-lowering drugs. And so they convinced the doctors it should be much, much lower. When I practiced medicine, why, the systolic blood pressure was deemed to be your age plus 100. So if I was 75 years of age and I had a systolic blood pressure of 175, that was perfectly normal. If I was 65, my blood pressure should be 165. Well, all of that has changed. All of that was wrong, we told you before. We want you to take these medications. And it's unfortunate that we find that there have been forces working within organized medicine that have a profit motive far more really effective than the protection of our health. Recently, it's been shown that a number of the doctors who work at our National Institute of Health, this premier organization that's there to protect us, this government body, are also on retainers for the drug companies. They're not only drawing a government salary, while they're getting salaries as consultant salaries, I want you to understand, just for consultant for the drug companies. So you have to understand that even people in, within organized medicine are beginning to point this out. So many of our journals publish articles that give glowing reports on how effective a drug is. But of course now they're noticing that you get the effect of this glowing report when the people are being subsidized who've written it by the drug companies. And so they're saying, well, you're going to have to let us know if you're being subsidized or being paid to write this article. There's been a prostitution, tragically, of science today, and they're using it to advance their own agenda rather than necessarily in the name of the public health. And then there seems to be another agenda, and that is so many of the things that they tell us to do really are not good for our health. And one of them, of course, when we're told not to take vitamins, oh, don't take those vitamins, why, you're just wasting your money, you're having very expensive urine. And I believe, well, maybe some of that is well-meaning, but I believe that some of that is intentionally wrong. Well, right now, let's go to Mike, who's calling here from Santa Cruz. And if you're out there across America, you'd like to talk to Bill about this issue of vitamin C and really some of this exciting new scientific evidence and information that's available, why, give us a call. The 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Let's go to Mike in Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. For children, can they get too much vitamin C or E or zinc or selenium?
I imagine they could, but it's kind of hard to figure that they're growing so fast that we wonder. There was a Dr. Frederick Klenner who wrote a book and talked about super babies, giving them extra vitamin C, because as we're growing, we're trying to build that goo or connective tissue between our cells that connects them, and you need vitamin C to do it. And I don't know, you're making millions of red blood cells a minute, millions of brain cells, and you need something to fill the spaces between those cells called connective tissue or collagen, and I don't know how you could overdo on the vitamin C. You can get what we call a little diarrhea out of this, because if you're ill, you almost never get this. This is called bowel tolerance. If you got something going on, the cells, anytime cells are ill or damaged, they need more, and so they'll use up more. But your body has a way of telling you, well, I've kind of reached the top point by kind of signaling you with a little diarrhea. Now, you can induce that in young children, so you need to be careful, especially in babies. They're a little small. You don't want to have fluid balance problems. But we think constipation is another sign of scurvy. So many people in the population, and because vitamin C goes the other way. So it's just a... I don't know how you'd overdo those. There is the only selenium toxicity we have reported is in China, where they did some mining with water. They squirted water on the land and pushed the dirt out of the way and got this toxicity because they exposed the selenium directly. So I don't know. There's never been an overdose of selenium. I don't know how you'd overdo zinc. You only absorb maybe 10% of it from the diet, even out of supplements. So it's very hard to say you'd overdose on something. There are some limits. There's some wisdom. And, of course, in young children, probably some less doses because the bodies are smaller, certainly. But it's kind of hard to overdo because of the growth demands in young children.
And you can get overdoses, of course, of vitamin A and vitamin D.
Well, you certainly can. Now, those are fat-soluble vitamins. And the fatty vitamins are stored, and that is you could overstore them.
Okay.
The water-soluble C and the B vitamin is not so.
Anything else you want to ask, Mike?
And can you overdo the resveratrol?
You certainly can. Resveratrol is this wonderful red wine polyphenol, and Longevinex is a brand of this that's kind of been made up. I had a hand in doing this, but I noticed when I was taking two of these pills, you kind of get thin blood. Now, I'm on fish oil, a lot of other antioxidants, but I noticed my bleeding time was about 8 minutes. It should be 3 minutes. That is the time it takes to clot your blood if you had a little cut. And I noticed I had some little red dots down on my chest, and that meant the blood vessels and so on, the blood was too thin. So I just tell everybody, if you're taking one of those pills, just one a day. They're plenty powerful. You don't want to overdo it. And, of course, we just all need to learn. But, of course, you do want to thin your blood as you get older, because blood clotting and so on is a major risk for heart attacks, strokes, and other things.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
No, thanks.
All right, fine. Let's go then to Matt, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Matt from Michigan.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, how are you hearing us there in Michigan?
Over the 600 AM WSNL.
So all right, very good.
And I tell at least three people every day about the program.
Okay, fine. Well, you just twist their arms just a little bit.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Okay, yeah. Do you have a question for our guest?
Well, indeed. This may be an erroneous recall on my part, but I thought I had read somewhere that the bioactivity of nutrients is a matter of concern, and vitamin C in the form of ascorbic acid or ascorbate seems, I've read, is not nearly as bioactive and beneficial as an organic food matrix form.
That I know, we've read these mistaken things. These are all commercial people pushing this, that if you just get your vitamin C out of food or a food-based vitamin, then therefore you'd need far less. It's balderdash. You've got to get the blood levels up. These people have a commercial interest in saying this. I'm not picking on you. I'm picking on these arguments, because we know we've done these studies. And Dr. Hickey, someday we're going to get him on the radio here soon, and he'll be able to dispel a lot of this for you. There's also been the story that, you know, certain forms of vitamin C. But vitamin C is vitamin C, and if you get it, it works. And it cures scurvy and cataracts and whatever. You may be able to enhance it a little bit by putting bioflavonoids just to push it into the system a little slower so it doesn't dissipate so fast and so on. But vitamin C is going to be vitamin C, and all of these ideas that have come out, even the ester C's and so on, they don't really, they're good advertising. They may get a lot of people to take vitamin C, so I don't complain.
Gotcha.
But vitamin C is vitamin C, and that's the way the animals make it. This is the way we get it, and it works. Now, there are some people, if you're taking high doses of vitamin C, that are bothered by ascorbic acid, the last part of it, the acidic part. So get the alkaline form of vitamin C. Those are the mineral ascorbates. You'll get some nice minerals with it. And those are milder, and because minerals are alkaline, it's an alkaline form, and it's less troublesome on your stomach. So those are just little tips, but you're still just trying to get the vitamin C as a... in there, what we call ascorbate. That's the molecule.
Gotcha.
Okay. Anything else, Matt?
Yes, quickly. Dr. Samuel Epstein authored the book, The Breast Cancer Prevention Program, and then I heard a doctor, R-A-P-P, Dr. Rapp, a lady toxicologist, addressing the pervasive and persistent toxicity of these Agent Orange family herbicides that are being spread on golf courses and people's lawns, etc. Would vitamin C be a useful tool to protect against the toxicity of those chemicals?
Did you say vitamin D as in dog?
No, C.
Vitamin C. Vitamin C would. Now, understand, they've changed the way they make some of these herbicides and insecticides. They used to be fat soluble. Uh-oh, that would be stored in the body. Understand, it would be stored in your fat cells. All of a sudden they realize this, so the guy that comes around my house, we did a little talk out in front of my house before I let him even in the driveway, and I made him show me the labels on the insecticides that he has to squirt around and glue up kind of a large piece of property, and they're all water soluble. That means they won't stick in your system. If you ever happen to get contaminated with these, they won't stick in your system. We made a terrible mistake years ago by having these fat-soluble ones, and oops, they could develop, accumulate, and that would be terrible, especially when you get them in youngsters who have smaller bodies and don't have a system to get rid of it. But your body, through vitamin C, will make something in the liver called glutathione, which will then detoxify your system from these herbicides and pesticides and insecticides. So, yes, vitamin C, and by all means, if you're exposed to radiation or toxins of any kind, you go on immediate high-dose vitamin C.
Okay, anything else, Matt?
No, that's it. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Night.
Okay, fine. Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, that there seemed to be a lower incidence of cancer with taking large doses of vitamin C. Now, what about some of the studies that were done many years ago with intravenous vitamin C to get very, very high levels? Was there any influence there on the progression of cancers?
Well, this is how we got into this whole revelation, because the National Institutes of Health Researchers in the March issue of Annals of Internal Medicine were attempting to study and re-look, give a re-evaluation of the difference between oral and intravenous vitamin C. And what they discovered was that you could now achieve 6 times greater levels of vitamin C in the bloodstream intravenously than you could orally. This was a wonderful discovery. We're going to get back to that in a second. But in order to discover that, they had to have people take it orally for comparison, and that's where it was revealed that oral doses can also get very high levels. Now, the point is that the highest dose we could get concentration in the bloodstream orally was nowhere near what we could get intravenously. And their main report showed that, their main finding, is that intravenous vitamin C is 6 times greater in concentration in the bloodstream than oral vitamin C taken in high doses. Oh my, oh my. You mean Linus Pauling? Yes, that's correct. This is what Linus Pauling did. He used intravenous vitamin C, doubled or quadrupled the remaining lifespan, the survival of terminal cancer patients with intravenous vitamin C in high doses, and the NIH researchers themselves said maybe we need to reevaluate the use of intravenous vitamin C now that we realize we can achieve such high levels to reevaluate this for cancer treatment. Oh my. Linus Pauling, who was belittled, Mayo Clinic researchers said it was all bogus. They're going to eat their words now, because it's the government scientists themselves revealing for the first time that this is possibly a breakthrough in cancer treatment, could increase the survival time for cancer patients.
Well, we're just sort of getting to the end of the program. I'd like you, though, perhaps to talk a little bit about Longevinix, which I know you had an interest in, that you had helped actually produce this product after going back to Harvard University and spending some time with David Sinclair there, who is certainly the world's premier researcher on longevity and trying to find something that would prolong life. So would you like to just talk a little bit about Longevinix in the few minutes we have left?
Well, the impact of this, I have a commercial interest in it, having been an inventor of this pill. But I know everyone's getting tired of hearing, now I take vitamin C and E, and then I take selenium and zinc, and then I take fish oil. And all those things are wonderful, and they're good, and we need them, and they're essential. But one of the things that's just a compelling is that people who drank wine, red wine, throughout all their life, who didn't have a great diet, who certainly didn't go out and exercise every day or even take vitamin pills, when we went back and looked at it, were outliving the rest of us. My, oh, my. Now, these weren't the people that consumed too much. They were moderate drinkers of red wine. And that's the discovery that Harvard found, Dr. David Sinclair, finding a red wine molecule that has to be preserved in a pill as it is in a bottle of wine. It has to be an airtight pill and produced in a special way. And, of course, the first pill that has been shown to have the same genetic activity. This is to activate a survival gene in the human body that may make it possible someday for humans to live decades longer, is this Longevinix pill. It's made in a special way, and of course, people have been asking about it. It's been in a number of magazines now and getting quite a bit of publicity. But it would make it possible for humans to live super long and super healthy. Longevinix, you may want to find out about it. Go to my website, AskBillSardi.com, to read about the red wine molecule called resveratrol, or Longevinix.com, Longevinex.com, or you can call 866-405-4000 to find out how to order Longevinix. Now, this is a wonderful development. It really backs up the Bible, because they drank wine that was probably had more, the Greeks had more of this resveratrol in it years and decades and centuries ago. So we know that it may be another explanation for the super longevity that we read about in the Bible. And, of course, it's all going to come true here, as researchers now telling us at Harvard, they've discovered ways through genetic manipulation to help humans live far longer than ever dreamt possible.
Well, I think it's exciting, and certainly we've been taking it ever since you first put it on the market, and our whole family takes it. I think it's beneficial. It's sort of hard to tell. We won't know for another 40 or 50 years whether it's going to help me.
Well, remember, all this is unproven until we do the test, but theoretically that one pill would replace your blood pressure pill, your cholesterol pill, your diabetic pill, every pill that we know. Because it turns on a survival gene that makes up for all this in the human body. We'll find out if all that's true when the studies are completed, but right now that's the promise that it has. Certainly a lot of people reporting some wonderful things when they take it. If you want to find out more, let us know. We do have a little book we wrote about it, The Anti-Aging Pill. When you order the Longevinex, you'll get a free copy of that book. It's over 250 pages, has 450 references. You can check it out for yourself.
So, well, why don't you go ahead and get that telephone number out where people can learn more about Longevinex?
That's 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000. If you want to read about it on the Internet, longevinex.com.
All right, fine. And then if they do order it, why, you're going to send them a copy of your book?
That's a free book. That's a $25 book, and they're really going to enjoy that book. And for many of your listeners, they're going to enjoy reading the parts that validate the Bible and its super longevity written about in the book of Genesis.
All right, we've got the time, I think, for one more call, and we've got Gloria calling from Spokane. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi. Just fine. I just had a quick question for Bill. I just heard or read that so many of these multivitamins are contaminated with lead, and I was a little... I think that that might not be true. Was that the media's attempt to try to get us not to take multivitamins?
Well, sometimes it is the media. Sometimes it's just companies, and they don't realize they're scaring you away from the products, not getting it to them. Actually, there are assays done. These companies are liable under the law for insurance reasons and so on, so they have assays done. I don't know of a company that would have high lead levels. Now, this actually happened to calcium supplements in California. They found small amounts, but nonetheless, the law said you didn't need to have any, and you know what? The calcium supplement companies eliminated all the lead from the calcium supplements immediately. They knew of ways to do it. So there were only small amounts, but we get worried because it builds up in the body. I wouldn't be worried. I don't know of any lead contaminated. There are assays done on all this to make sure that these companies don't get sued. So believe me, they know not to have it in there.
Okay.
Anything else, Gloria?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind, Dean Gocher is going to be coming to Spokane and speaking on Friday night, all day Saturday and Sunday.
How can people find out about this?
Well, I have some information here. Well, first of all, he talks about the manipulative techniques that are being used by change agents and using the dialectic technique and Delphi-ing everyone when you go to a public meeting or even a church growth movement. They use these techniques so that they bring everyone into consensus. And it's a manipulative technique. And he is going to be here tomorrow night, and it's 7 and 9 p.m. at the Coffee House, North 1231 Washington Street, across from Rock Point Tower. And then on Saturday all day from 9 to 5 at Wayside Community Center, 2200 West Monroe Road. And that's north on Highway 395, about 5 miles south of Deer Park. And that's from Hastings and Division, straight north on Highway 395. And then on Sunday evening at 6 to 8 p.m., he's going to be at Calvary Chapel, Spokane, 511 West Hastings Road, and he is going to be discussing techniques that are being used by what they call the church growth movement and seeker-sensitive movement and the purpose-driven church philosophy and how dangerous these methods are.
Well, let me recommend that you go to hear Dean. I know he's a personal friend. He's sort of like Paul Revere going around the country on his own saying, don't you realize that the facilitators are coming instead of the redcoats? But believe me, the facilitators are carefully trained in schools to control your mind, your reaction, and your response. So let me suggest that you go to hear Dean, learn from him. He does these, as the labor of love, totally dedicated to trying to awaken the American people to the fact that we are being manipulated as part of a worldwide program. And until the American people understand what's going on, why, they're not going to be able to recognize it, because it just seems so nice. They all get together and they ask you what you think, and they write it down on the bulletin board. But believe me, they've already decided what the consensus is going to be. God bless you. Thanks for getting the information out, Gloria.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Gloria calling from Spokane, and I realize that isn't applicable to many of our listeners in the East, but I did want to have that information out. And if Dean comes to your area, or there's other people in your area, they'd like to get an announcement out, we're always glad to put it out. Well, Bill, I really want to thank you so very much for being with us, and I do hope when this pharmacologist, professor of pharmacology, comes here from England, that you'll get him onto our program, and we can, of course, get him to share his wisdom and his work with our listeners across America, because these are the things people have to know. They're going to have to be responsible for their health. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners? No, I guess we lost Bill. Well, anyway, right now, of course, we want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. If you'd like more information about how to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our message is very simple. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the minds and hearts of people. There really are evil people out there that will give you false information that really would... they're anti-human, they're truly demonic. As difficult as it is to believe, there are people who want wars, who want disease. And if you don't believe that, read Bertrand Russell's wonderful statement in The Impact of Science on Society, page 103. That's Bertrand Russell, The Impact of Science on Society, page 103, written in 1952, where he talks about using wars to control the population, and if we could only have a black death sweep the world every generation, then there wouldn't be so many people out there to create problems. And, of course, Jacques Cousteau, writing in the UNESCO Courier, or at least interviewed for an article in the November 1991 issue of the UNESCO Courier, talking about how we're just going to have to eliminate 350,000 people a day. There really are evil people out there. You need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or the video by that name. You need to get the new video we're offering. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You can get the 4-hour version of the video or the 10-hour version and see some of the rock and roll stars talking about how they sold their souls to the devil. Now, to a lot of people, they sort of smile at that. They think it's like, well, this only occurs on television. Let me tell you, it doesn't only occur on television. These are very real. There are secret satanic societies, and not one, but many of them. And, of course, you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you begin to get a picture of that. You need to get our 4-tape set on the Skull and Bones Society. You need to get our 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. Our 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. Our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, and so many other things that are available at Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then we hope that many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can listen there on the Internet to our programs 5 hours a day on one of the three networks we're on, the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network, and, of course, this network, the Radio Liberty Network, that is bringing you this program this evening. Please tell others about our radio programs. Tell them about our website. Feel free to pull down anything off of our website and copy of our newsletters that are there. If you get any of our videos or tape sets, you have our permission to copy those. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we are going to have with us very shortly, we hope, Joel Skousen, who's one of my favorite guests. He's the editor of World Affairs Brief, which comes out on a weekly basis on email, and I want you to know I read it every week when it comes. I read two things every week when they come. One is Bob Chapman's International Forecaster letter, which keeps me up abreast of the latest breaking things as far as the financial world is concerned, and then, of course, Joel Skousen's analysis of what's going on in the news. Well, while we're waiting for Joel, let me just talk a little bit about what's happening over in Iraq to put things into the perspective. Now, we did a wonderful interview this afternoon with Yosef Badansky, who is the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Nonconventional Warfare, and really a fascinating individual. Now, he doesn't approach things from the spiritual point of view or going into the background of the secret societies as we do, but at least he's able to communicate with many of the people, with the intelligence groups over in the Near East. I'm talking about the Mossad and the Russian intelligence and certainly the Lebanese intelligence. At least get the information from these people and begin putting it together in an incredible story. And we do carry his book, Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War and Against America. That's Bin Laden, The Man Declared War Against America, and we recommend that very strongly as a background of what's going on today. But in this analysis of his latest book, the one point he made out was that the United States, by not planning at all about what was going to happen, there was no question we were going to win the war. But then what do you do after you've won the war? Well, you've got to be able to subjugate the people. And instead of leaving the police force intact, most of these people were not members of some sort of a Saddam conspiracy. There were people doing a job. And instead of leaving the army intact, and maybe there were a few people there who were war criminals, but most of them are no more war criminals than the members of our army. They were simply members of the military doing their job and using the structure of the existing society to reestablish a new society, getting rid of Saddam Hussein. What they did was destroy the army. What they did was destroy police force, tortured a number of the leaders of the army, killed the head of the Air Force by torture. What sort of effect do you think that's having on the Iraqi people? And then, of course, when it came to Fallujah, when four Americans were captured there, they were contract agents, CIA contract agents. Well, of course, we're told that, if you are out of uniform, you have no rights at all. And they were killed and brutally treated and dragged through the streets. And then we were going to go into Fallujah, and we failed. We failed miserably. We had, of course, to back away and turn this over to the Iraqi army that we'd put together and take him one of the men that we'd previously pushed out of office and now give him back a command. And now we've turned over the country to, sort of a puppet government. Everybody knows it's a puppet government. But what we have effectively done, tragically, is to show the leaders of the other Arab countries in that area that America really is not very effective. Oh, it can do a pretty good military job, by brute force, but you can't subdue the country. And because the Islamists have come in there, and these are the radical followers of Osama bin Laden, have come in from all areas there, specifically to fight the infidels, and the infidels backed down. They ran for the cover of their camps there. And the message that's coming through to the other countries in that area is maybe we better start, rather than looking to America to protect us, try to come up with a compromise with this new brand of of Islam, or I should say maybe the old brand of Islam that goes back to the time of the Prophet, this violent Islam that wants to conquer by the sword. So maybe we better look to them and see if we can accommodate with them, because we really don't think we can trust America to look after us. And I think that what we've done is lost tremendous credibility. What we have done is something Osama bin Laden could never have done, and that is inflame the entire Muslim world and begin moving many of these societies rapidly into this ancient form of violent Islam that did not exist really outside of a few isolated areas prior to about 24-25 years ago. With that as a background, let's go to our special guest this evening who just drove in and is sort of out of breath. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. Don't need me at all, I guess. You're doing a great job.
No, I do need you very badly. You know, when I don't have a guest, I've just got to start thinking of something to say. So I did have a fascinating interview with Joseph Bedansky this afternoon, and although there are lots of things I don't think he understands, I think there's a lot he does understand, and a fascinating hour anyway. So,
yes.
But let's you pick up the story on what you'd like to talk about.
Well, let's continue on with Iraq here. What's really telling is the collusion between American media and their support for this new interim Iraqi government. They granted themselves this week complete martial law emergency powers in what appears to be an Iraqi version of the USA Patriot Act. And most likely this was done at U.S. direction. It's obvious that these rules and laws have been under consideration for a long time. But what was interesting is the New York Times, as they told the story, said Prime Minister Iyad Alawi on Tuesday signed into law broad martial law powers that allow him to impose curfews anywhere in the country, ban groups he considers seditious, and order the detentions of people suspected as being security risks. I mean, this is typical of police state type governments. But notice the wordage. I want to bring to your listeners' attention the word that he signed into law. This implies a democratic process where the law originates with an elected legislative body and then is either signed or vetoed by the executive branch. In this case, there's nothing but an executive branch. There's no parliament. There's no Congress. This law was simply an executive decree. So why does the media persist in giving this process the aura of democracy? How is this law any different than any arbitrary, capricious decree by Saddam Hussein?
Well, I think that the thing that's so important for the American people to understand is Alawi had worked for the CIA in the past. He happens to be, I think it's the cousin of Shalabi, who, of course, now we're trying to make more respectable because the America went in and searched his place and now has condemned him. So that will hopefully, from their point of view, will make him more acceptable to the Iraqi people, because if the Americans don't like him, he must be good. And the poor people over there in Iraq are being simply having one autocratic government replaced by a puppet government, an American puppet government. Because anybody out there in the listening audience who really believes our troops are coming home really doesn't understand what's going on. We intend to leave our troops there more or less permanently, and it won't be very long before we find out what happened to Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. What was so interesting from Badansky's point of view is that the man I interviewed today, who is the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Nonconventional Warfare, is he validated what Joel Skousen told us many months ago. And that is that Saddam Hussein had moved his weapons of mass destruction into Syria. Our government knows that. I've got the same story from the former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Dor Gold. He talked about that, the articles in the New American about it. But the American people are not being told about this. I can't help but wonder if they're just going to, just by accident, find those shortly before the elections in November. Maybe they won't. We'll just have to wait and see. But there's no question at all that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. He moved them into Syria, and the American people are being lied to over and over and over again. Go ahead, Joel.
Yes. You know, people really have to understand the reason for this. The U.S. appears to be coming in and solving conflicts, but in fact they always stop short of solving the conflict. They stop short of eradicating the leader, just like they did in the Gulf War. You know, instead of removing Saddam Hussein, they left him to be able to create a new crisis down the road. They, of course, had satellite photos. We know this, and as I reported in the World Affairs Brief, this was part of Colin Powell's presentation to the UN. It was leaked as one of the items on the list that he was going to present in his Security Council review, and then it was scrapped at the last minute. And the reason it was scrapped was because the United States did not want the world to know that, in fact, the weapons had gone to Syria, because then they would have been required to attack Syria rather than Iraq, knowing that the weapons had gone there. But these weapons are being allowed to shuffle around in the Middle East because they are essential for the creation of future conflict, which is the only way the United States, on behalf of the United Nations, gets to go into a country and impose a UN mandate. Now, of course, you know, we have the facade right now that the U.S. is imposing its will unilaterally. But you'll notice that Bush continues to go back to the UN to coax them into the process. In other words, the U.S. is only serving as a surrogate for UN global purposes now. It paves the way for that and then turns the country over for UN peacekeeping. The United States citizens would be very reluctant, very reluctant to accept U.S. troops working directly for the UN. So playing this ruse as if they're acting independently does two things. One, it gets the American people to go along. And number two, it creates the impression in the world of high antagonism for this bully, the Americans rampaging through the world doing their will. And all of that plays into the globalist scenario as well. In my theory, I believe that antagonizing the Slavic and the Muslim world, which we've been doing since the 90s and the turn of the century, has given and raised great hatred among the Slavic and Muslim people against the United States. And who's the client state supplying weapons of mass destruction to the Slavs and the Muslims? The Russian-Chinese axis, who the Bush administration continues to claim before the American people that they are our allies. But they are no such thing. And the fact that the United States is covering for active war build up in participation on the part of Russia and China is indicative that they indeed want to foment the kind of global conflict that Russia and China are preparing for.
And of course, both Russia and China are working with Iran, who's increasingly becoming a nuclear power with the help of the Russians, the help of the Chinese communists. And of course, Iran will probably be one of the countries we will be tackling before too long. And the guys, we just can't let them get nuclear weapons. The trouble is they probably already have several, at least according to Budansky, that they purchased on the open market. And of course, what we're seeing is the progressive destabilization of the whole Middle East as a direct result of American foreign policy.
That's right. You know, China and Russia are playing with the Russian-Pakistan or the India-Pakistani conflict. You know, this is very interesting. Russia and China are allies. Russia is the patron state of India, and China is the patron state of Pakistan, and they're supposedly enemies. Now, how is it the two allies go and fund separate enemies? You know, if they're really enemies, I mean, if you would think that they would certainly be able to broker and force a peaceful understanding between them if they control all the military cards, which Russia and China do with both those states. But it's interesting as well that Pakistan is now turning out to be the North Korea of the southern Far East, as it is now starting to shuffle missiles and weapons of mass destruction to Saudi Arabia. That's, of course, not been publicly acknowledged by either the Saudis or the United States, but I've got it on good sources, and so does Joseph Budansky, and Gyor Shamis of Debka.com also has good information on that. So I think there's going to be some big surprises in this next Middle East war that the U.S. is going to be sitting there right in the middle of when this thing ignites, and it might well be something that the U.S. provokes through an attack on Iran or Syria. But I feel assured that because of the military buildup in Egypt at U.S. taxpayer expense, as well as the continuing buildup in Syria, Lebanon, and Iran, we're going to have a pretty potent war, and it's going to be a missile war this next time around.
Well, I think it may be a nuclear war. Is this what you're suggesting?
Not necessarily.
Or you think they've used chemical and biological weapons?
I think it's going to be chemical and biological, as well as conventional weapons. I'm just not really convinced there's much depth in a nuclear arsenal, even if they had some. Certainly the Iranians want to wait for this next big Middle East war until they have nuclear weapons. But it's going to take more than just five or six weapons, because Israel has the most effective anti-ballistic missile system in the world, the Arrow system, superior to our Patriot system because it has a warhead on it, and it's not just a bullet hitting a bullet like our dumbed-down system that we're going to be installing up in Alaska.
Isn't it interesting that we, will, of course, help the Israelis to put together an effective system, but they refused to build an effective system for America? We had an effective system in the 1970s, but aw shucks, we just can't figure out how to build one today.
It's also interesting that I had a call several years ago from a Pakistani wealthy business group who wanted to start to market fallout shelters in Pakistan. And they hired me as a consultant to do a basic modular design of shelters based upon local, you know, concrete building techniques there. And about a third the way into the project, they gave me a call and said the Pakistani government found out about it and nixed it, said, "You will not build fallout shelters for the Pakistani people."
Well, that's interesting, because, of course, in Switzerland, literally every family has a fallout shelter. Every school has a fallout shelter. They have them in Russia. They have them in China. But we don't have anything in America. And the government has done everything they could to discourage that. And certainly we attended a meeting within the last 2 weeks where a spokesman for FEMA was there, and the question was raised, what is FEMA going to do to protect the American people in case of a nuclear war? And the woman got up and said, "I work for FEMA. I'm a lecturer for FEMA. We have no program at all for you. And that's up to you, after all. You don't want a big daddy government looking after you." And that's absolutely right. The American people are going to have to look after themselves, because, of course, there are people in government who feel that the public is expendable.
But, of course, you have to awaken a complacent public. And that's why it's important for a government to take the lead and say, look, here's what the real situation is. Russia continues to build weapons of mass destruction. They are not, and I outlined in today's World Affairs Brief, something which, you know, we might well want to go over, the Bulletin of American or Atomic Scientists. It's granted it's a leftist organization, and they do track disarmament issues. And in their latest report, they do an annual report on what's going on in Russia in terms of their weapon systems. They are very open about it, even though they claim in the past year, very open about the fact that Russia, in fact, has backtracked and reneged on almost every one of their disarmament treaties. I'm talking about the recent ones with President Bush, and President Bush continues to unilaterally disarm our annexes. And
now, for our listeners out there, that is the MX missile that was put in the Reagan administration, the most recent and up-to-date missiles that we have, and we are unilaterally destroying them because, of course, the president looked into Putin's eyes and knew that this former head of the KGB was a man, or at least colonel in the KGB, was a man he could trust.
Yes, and here's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists saying, the past year has seen a renewed interest in nuclear weapons by President Vladimir Putin and the Russian military. There are several reasons for this. First, the abandonment of the START II treaty. Now, the U.S. is still abiding by it. Russia has abandoned it. Two, the impending deployment of the first stage of U.S. ballistic missile defense, and Russia, of course, is claiming, well, we're going to beef up our system. Three, NATO's April 1st enlargement, including 70 nations, including the Baltic states. Russia is playing as if these things threaten their stability, and so that's an excuse to continue to build up more nuclear weapons. And here's essentially what Russia has done. I guess we'll cover that after the brief.
We will cover that after the brief. We'll be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and, of course, we hope many of you will want to get his World Affairs Brief. We'll tell you when we get back how you can get this. I tell you, there's great information there. You want to go to Joel's website. That's worldaffairsbrief.com. Something well worthwhile doing in the morning after you go through your emails, which I try to do every day. And again, we'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen, the editor of World Affairs Brief. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and Joe, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Yes, we're covering the Bulletin of American Atomic Scientists, which is a leftist peace organization, disarmament organization. So they always try to give a rosy picture of disarmament, but they have not been able to do so in this current report because they appear to be honest enough to acknowledge that Russia is in the process of reneging on every nuclear disarmament treaty they have, or at least modifying significant portions of it. Let's hear them talk about estimating this. They say estimating the size, composition, and status of the Russian nuclear stockpile has always been difficult due to the lack of official information provided by Russian authorities. Well, that's a real understatement. In fact, it's nigh unto impossible to estimate the Russian stockpile because we've never been able to inspect it. At the end of the Cold War, for example, in about 1990, the Soviet Union had as many as 35,000 nuclear weapons. Estimates at the rate of dismantling from the U.S. appeared at hundreds to 1,000 to 2,000 per year. But what those estimates don't tell you is that all of those warheads and nuclear material went back to Russia into some supposedly reprocessing plant. The U.S. then was buying back uranium fuel for nuclear reactors here as part of the reprocessing of nuclear weapons. But in fact, there's no way that you can tell whether or not it's new uranium material or reprocessed back from Russians. So, for all we know, is that the Russians could simply be selling us new uranium fuel at an inflated price and playing as if they had been recycling their nuclear weapons. The key to this deception is the fact that we built the state-of-the-art facility for the Russians to remanufacture and renew and store their nuclear warheads. And ever since we completed that building, had hundreds of millions of dollars expense to the U.S. taxpayer, we were shut down. Our inspectors could never go back in there.
And, of course, we've given them hundreds of millions of dollars to do away with their chemical weapons. And there's always hundreds of millions of dollars to employ their scientists, because biological scientists, because, of course, we don't want them to go to work for Osama bin Laden. We've always find some justification for giving massive amounts of money to the Russians. We've been doing it going back to 1918. If you don't know that, don't understand that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because we go into that. We have created the best enemy money could buy, because if you don't have an enemy, how do you rally the people behind the government? Plato wrote about that, and the Republic was 2,350 years ago, there's nothing has changed. There's very little new that's under the sun.
That's right. I mean, looking at the SS-19, for example, a few years ago there were 130 operational SS-19s. It's a very potent missile, multiple warheads, supposed to be scrapped at the start too, but after Moscow treaty, the treaty was signed, Russia decided to slow down withdrawal. Putin announced just last October that Russia would deploy tens of additional new SS-19 missiles with hundreds of warheads beginning in 2010. So they had no intention of taking out the SS-19.
And so they tell us their military, they just don't have enough money to pay the military, and the military people are moving, they have jobs on the sides, but they never tell you that Russia is in full military production for a nuclear war. They're coming up with new nuclear submarines, and a lot of this is being financed by one guise or another by the American taxpayer.
Yes, I mean, look at the SS-24s. These are the missiles with 10 strategic warheads on them. They were supposed to be scrapped under START II in August of 2002.
Hold that thought right there. Okay. We'll bring on our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, and he's talking about, the recent report from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, pointing out that Russia is really building new missiles, deploying new missiles, and contrary to what you are being told, Russia obviously thinks that nuclear war is still fightable, and of course because America is going to put in about 10 to 20 anti-ballistic missiles, which probably won't work because they don't have a nuclear warhead on them as the Russians did do today, or as certainly as the Israelis have, or certainly as the Americans had, we had on our anti-ballistic missile system in the 1970s, probably our anti-ballistic missile system will not be effective. And we've only got 20 or so anti-ballistic missiles against those thousands and thousands of potential incoming warheads. But, of course, because of that, Russians now are justifying expanding their nuclear situation, their nuclear weapons. So go ahead, Joel.
Yes. Now, where the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists is most naive is their projection of modest production continues in the SS-27. This is the Topol M missile, and this is the most dangerous missile Russia has. It has multiple reentry vehicles. SS-27s can have anywhere from 3 to 10 warheads, depending on the size. And essentially, they're giving the standard line that Moscow gives, that they have a regiment of 6 silos entering service in December 21st of 2003, so that's just about 6 months ago, and the total number is 36. However, and these missiles are apparently housed in former SS-19 and SS-24 silos. There's also a mobile version of the SS-27 carrying a single warhead and expected to become operational this year. In fact, it's already been tested. But the big point is they're missing, is that underneath Yamato Mountain, the United States knows that they built whole missile factories, so we frankly do not know how many Topol M's are being manufactured underground in the Urals. They are clearly, you know, going to not only intend to win a nuclear war, to survive a nuclear war, but to win a nuclear war by maintaining their top secret production facilities under very hardened conditions in the Ural Mountains.
And the question is, why would we be building up an enemy that could potentially destroy us? None of this makes sense if you're looking at things logically.
Well, even, you know, the Russian oil situation, you probably have heard about Yukos Oil, run by purported mafia insider Mikhail Khodorkovsky. But, you know, and he's been in jail, and he's now beset upon with the courts. They're talking about bankruptcy. They're talking about taking over into receivership the Russian government, the Yukos Oil Company. But all of this is just a show intended to portray Russia as a government cracking down on the powerful and super rich. In reality, all the powerful mafia dons of Russia are the real ruling class.
And they're all ex-KGB, aren't they?
Well, they're more than that. They're actually the communist top leadership. For example, Boris Berezovsky put himself in as the secretariat of the entire Commonwealth of Independent States. That means he's the general head of the continuing Soviet Union. And then, of course, when he fled in this phony show, it's like Amit Chalabi, trying to show that we're on the wrong side of the government now, so we're independent. He flees to the West, has all these villas in London and down in the southern coast of Spain. But Spanish police happened to be had his villas wired in Spain, and so who should come in 2002, I guess, the year before he ascended to the presidency? Vladimir Putin was a regular guest visiting Boris Berezovsky at his villa in Spain. He'd fly into Gibraltar, courtesy of England, so they knew about this. Then he would take a ship around the coast up to the villa, dock right at the villa on the coast, so he'd never have to go inside Spain itself. So this tells us that the British were involved, and that's how the Spanish got involved, because anything the British is helping, the Spanish have a lot of antagonism towards Britain because of Britain's continued possession of Gibraltar, where they have a military base and an airport there, and it's just kind of a slam on Spanish pride. But in any case, they really go after anybody who comes into Gibraltar and tries to skirt coming in through Spanish customs, and that's how come they ended up tracking Putin there. So Putin takes office, of course, and immediately declares Boris Berezovsky enemy number one and begins to issue prosecution orders against him. But it's all a show.
Sort of like Laurel and Hardy or Amos and Andy?
I think a little more sophisticated.
All right. Well, that is simply a figure of speech to try to demonstrate, that Martin and Lewis or certainly Abbott and Costello, they put on a great show, but it's all show. We'll be back here in just a moment or two with our special friend Joel Skousen, and of course, when we return, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. And, of course, he's been talking about how supposedly the Russians, Putin is clamping down on the head of this large oil company. But really, the truth of the matter is that the oil company and other leaders, but really they're sort of all working hand in glove. So pick up the story from there.
Well, the original communist leaders, of course, bequeathed to themselves all of the riches of Russia, the gas program, the oil program, the gold mines, all of the other mining industries and the railroads and other things, and made these huge conglomerates so that they instantly became wealthy, and that's how they could maintain power. Now, they, of course, circulate around Europe as if they are mafia chieftains, and that's how the press describes them, but that's really just a cover. These were the former secret leaders of the Soviet Union when you had anybody from Brezhnev to Gorbachev and Yeltsin. All of these are simply puppets. The proof, for example, that Gorbachev was, is that 2 years before being the premier of Russia, he was just a mid-level arms controller. Now, in the Soviet Union system, you don't rise to become the head of state, you know, from a mid-level arms control position. You know, who chooses them? The one who chooses them, if you rose that fast, in fact, are the real powers that be. In fact, the entire Gorbachev coup was such a phony sham. It was typified, or at least the evidence of it being a sham is typified by the fact that every one of the top police powers in Russia, that is the defense minister, the head of the KGB, the head of the GRU, the head of the military, all of those people were just mid-level bureaucrats. Less than a year before this coup. In other words, they were suddenly vaulted to a position that appeared to put them at the top levers of power within the state. And yet, when this coup failed, apparently, what the story was from the West is that all of these four people fled. Now, I have to ask the question, who does the head of the KGB flee from? And who does the head of the military flee from? If they really have the power. So if they don't have the power, that means there is somebody above them. But if you believe what people write about Soviet hierarchy, the head of the KGB and the military and the defense minister and the GRU, those are the top powers of enforcement.
As I remember, they were all going to be arrested and executed, and then eventually they were all just sort of let go. Sorry, fellas. Well, if anybody really believes that in that brutal dictatorship they would let these people off, to try to overthrow the legitimate government, they have to be incredibly naive.
Or that the KGB couldn't capture Gorbachev at his villa, which was unprotected. I mean, these people have taken down, heads of state with many military guards around.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and we're talking about the great Gorbachev coup, and of course that the coup people, the people who control the KGB and the army and all the centers of power, just were unable to take down Gorbachev, and Gorbachev then of course came back, and I've forgotten the details of this or whether it was, but anyway, it was as phony as a $3 bill at the time, and these men who led the coup, who ordinarily would have been executed or shot on the spot, were, of course, sent to prison for a few days, and then suddenly they were rehabilitated, but they certainly were never treated harshly, as you would anticipate would happen in a true ruthless dictatorship that has killed over 60 million of its own people.
Well, and of course, the larger question is, why did these four heads of the police state of Russia have to flee? Who were they fleeing from? I mean, the KGB isn't going to be arrested by his own KGB agents, and if supposedly they were all involved in the plot, head of the army, the defense minister, and the GRU. I mean, these people, if they were head of the plot, they had all the power and they controlled all the police forces. Who are they running from? Who's going to capture them? You see, I don't understand that. I don't understand when the West says, and President Bush gets on television and say, we call for these coup leaders to honor the law and the Constitution of Russia, as if that's ever done anyone any good. The way that law is written, of course, it's a railroad trip to the gulags.
In fact, I think it was, I remember so vividly, I think this is the only revolution we ever saw and color on television in our living room. This whole thing was staged, and then a lot of these people were talking in English, and of course they bring in the fellow who was the head of the tank corps that's set to put down the rebellion, and he announces, well, we don't have any ammunition for our tanks, for our guns, or for our cannons here. You have nothing to fear. What sort of revolution and counter-revolution is this?
Yeltsin climbs up on one of these tanks and proceeds to broadcast messages, and we are to believe that the coup leaders, the KGB, and the military forces under their control could not have captured that radio station and shut down that TV broadcast. It's just incredulous that our supposedly savvy media journalists never brought out these obvious contradictions to what any normal Sovietologist would know about.
Well, we live in a world of make-believe. We live in a world of shadows, of symbolism over substance. And so often we will find these foreign leaders addressing their people in English. You know, they've got these Arabs and they're up there addressing the people in English so we can understand what they're saying. Does anybody really believe this is the way things are done? What so much of this? And understand, it's all aimed at the American people. And time again, you see these absurdities, and yet the American people just swallow it as if we're seeing reality.
Well, let's go back to the reality of our United States political campaigns. It's a lot of illusion as well. We have both political parties putting forth skull and bones conspirators, pretending to compete one another. If we look at John Kerry's campaign, he isn't trying very hard to compete with Bush. Take the illegal amnesty issue. It's a hot button for Americans. They really are disturbed that we continue to let illegal aliens pour across the border while we're supposed to be fighting war on terror. And yet both President Bush and John Kerry come out with specific programs not too different from one another, supporting amnesty for illegal aliens. President Bush doesn't call it amnesty, but a guest worker program, but it amounts to the same thing. And now we find President Bush chastising members of the Border Patrol for having the audacity to arrest illegal aliens sitting at a bus stop because they're so many miles away from the border. The president is, or it really wasn't the president, it was the head of Homeland Security, or at least that section over the Border Patrol was chastising them for being overzealous because they were looking for illegal aliens away from the border.
For doing their job right. The other day, here in our area, there were all these illegal aliens out there with their little red flag with a black eagle on it, protesting that raids by the Border Patrol. And I thought, why doesn't the Border Patrol just come up here and arrest all these people? Most of them are illegal aliens, but they'd get into real trouble if they enforced the laws of this land, because the illegal aliens are being used to drive a wedge right through the very heart of our society.
And so now presidential hopeful John Kerry selected John Edwards as his vice president running mate. I guess now we know why the up-and-coming senator from North Carolina was invited to participate in this year's Bilderberg conference in Milan, Italy. Only 100 or so persons are invited each year, regular heads of state, major players in global politics like Henry Kissinger, Rockefeller, Bill Clinton, Donald Rumsfeld have been attending. And keep in mind, however, that the Bilderberger meeting really is not where grand global strategies are hatched. This isn't a secret meeting where they sit down and talk and argue together. It's kind of a leadership meeting where older leaders, the people really in the know, who meet, by the way, prior to the Bilderberger meeting, they meet at the Aspen Institute, at least they did in the past few years, to plan for this meeting, and then they make presentations. And they check the reaction, they hobnob with people, they have lots of little spies to go around and see how people are reacting to the latest presentations of where we need to go globally. And it's kind of a leadership building. And I think that clearly John Edwards is being tested for entrance into the global leadership. I personally don't think that John Edwards is going to help Kerry win. I think Kerry has specifically been chosen because he is beatable, just like Al Gore was, meant to take a fall. Edwards would add to the superficial attraction of the Kerry campaign. There's wisdom in having a VP come from the South, where you have a presidential candidate representing the East Coast elite. And Edwards is considerably more charismatic, in my opinion, than Kerry, and gives a softer image. However, his political record on leftist social and economic causes is just as bad as Kerry, if not worse. Edwards will not attract anyone in the political middle, except perhaps the soccer mom type who puts personality and looks above the issues. Now, it was beginning to look almost like nobody wanted to run with Kerry. At least the insider, people like New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, one of the country's top Hispanic Democrats, declined Kerry's invitation. I think he's close enough to Bill Clinton to know that he was Kerry's going to be a fall guy in this election, and so don't get on board.
All right, sir. Well, I thought it was really, as you commented, it is so interesting that, you know, that here is John Edwards, Senator John Edwards, goes to the Bilderberger meeting, comes back 3 weeks later, and is picked by John Kerry as the running mate. So, and then, of course, we see Ralph Reed, of the formerly the Christian Coalition, the head of the Republican Party in Georgia, a leading Christian spokesman, who is, of course, attends the Bilderberger meeting as well. And you sort of begin to wonder, what's this really all about? Is it possible that these people of great wealth are going to use or try to use the Christians of this country to push their agenda of the New World Order, the New World Religion? And what do you think about that, Joe?
I think they already have, Dr. Stan. I know that Jerry Falwell was worked on and you know, convinced to back Republicans no matter what. Gary Bauer used to be pretty tough-thinking, and he's real soft now on the Bush administration. Occasionally he gets awakened and puts up a little bit of protest, and then he gets a call from people higher up. But, you know, it's sad to say, but people who have a large following and a large staff, whether it's Falwell or Bauer, and you know, Bauer's pretty good and solid on many, many issues, but he's really soft on President Bush in terms of calling a spade a spade. But, you know, they have a big following. And they know, they read the numbers of what comes in when they start attacking President Bush, and their contributions go down. They start to get a lot of hate mail. They get a lot of cancellations on their magazines and their printed material. Even my good friend Don McElvaney in his letter doesn't mention conspiracy anymore because he did a lot of advertising, got a lot of, you know, more conservative mainstream Republicans who will cancel their subscriptions if you start to really talk down about President Bush and the fact that he's really not a true conservative or Christian, in my opinion. Now, I think he believes in Christianity, but that's a long way from honoring it. He also believes in the skull and bone immunity system that he's been granted. He wants them both, in other words, one foot in mammon and one foot ostensibly with the Lord, and I just don't think the Lord allows that kind of dual-mindedness.
All right, well, let's go to Matt, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I was wondering if Joel recalls the fact that President Clintonista had signed, I believe, an executive order requiring submarine commanders to get authorization in the event of a crisis situation before they went on the offensive regarding the launch of any missiles. That's the first question. Second,
let's just take one question at a time. Are you aware of anything of that sort?
I am. It's still secret. I've had military sources tell me that it was part of PDD-60, the one that took that changed our missile defense posture and basically said you will not rely on launch on warning, but will be willing to absorb a nuclear strike and then retaliate afterwards. And part of that absorbing the nuclear strike was changing the launch code procedures so that, in fact, if communications with submarines was cut off, they still had to have permission before they could launch, and that's a major change. Now, I haven't seen the actual orders because they are secret, but I have people in the military who have seen them confirm that, yes, that's true.
Okay, anything else, Matt?
Oh, boy. So that was PDD number 60, I think you
right.
said. Okay, the other...
That's a presidential decision directive to the military.
Yeah, and okay. I heard also from an investigative journalist that the heads of both mainstream political parties are on the company directors of the companies that are now producing these electronic vote tabulation machines, which can be rigged according to sophisticated software. And I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
I have heard the same thing, yes, and I haven't actually gone to confirm the information, so I can't verify it, but I have heard there's a lot of crossover between higher-ups in both parties with Diebold and the other company whose name I forget. But yes. I have done...
Pardon me? Sure. Can I give you the website of the gal who apparently discovered this?
Certainly.
It's ecotalk.org.
Ecotalk.org. Okay, ecotalk.org. Go ahead. Anything else, Matt?
And then, Joel, there was this rather mysterious fire out in believe, yeah, New Mexico, during Clintonista's reign of terror, and the U.S. Forestry Service accepted responsibility in setting the fire under conditions that no one in their right mind would ever do.
Absolutely correct.
Under that cover of the fire, there were very sensitive documents that were stolen from, was it Los Alamos?
That's what I heard as well, yes.
Well, so these things keep going on and on. Okay. Any other points? We've got to take another call there, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's get Roger in Allentown. Hi, Roger. You have a question or comment?
Yes, thanks, Jen. To me, the more interesting question, if either of you guys know, is how the ostensible collapse of Gorbachev and the Soviet Union might have differed with the plans laid out by Soviet defector Anatoly Golitsyn in his book New Lies for Old, where, as he pointed out, the plans were basically well in advance that this was in part to reopen the floodgates of aid from the West, etc.
All right, fine. Now, this book is New Lies for Old. We do carry that book. If you haven't read it, we have it in stock. It's important. It was written about 1983, and, of course, the Soviet Union collapsed about 1991. But all part, at least according to Golitsyn, I believe he's accurate, of a carefully conceived plan to, as Roger says, to justify ever-increasing aid from the United States and the West to the faltering economy, socialist economy of Russia. What are your thoughts on that, Joel?
Well, I concur that there is complete confirmation of Golitsyn's thesis in the phony demise, and I refer to it as the phony demise of the Soviet Union. They simply went underground. Now, it is true that they did let their colonies or their puppet states go partially. Now, in most of these states, such as in Romania with Ceausescu, with Poland with Solidarity, and with Václav Havel in Czechoslovakia and Bulgaria as well, every one of those countries is run by a former communist, and I say former in quotes, because these people, like Chalabi, carefully positioned themselves right before the fall of communism to become to pretend to be anti-communist, as Lech Walesa did in Poland, but there's significant evidence to show that Solidarity was, in fact, a front for the communists, just controlling both sides of the political spectrum. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody involved in Solidarity was a puppet for the Russians. They were legitimate freedom fighters attracted to Solidarity as well. But Václav Havel, of course, covered up for the fact that the SS-24s were still from the supposed to be dismantled from the Intermediate Forces Treaty in Europe, and he knew that those missiles were still in those mountain tunnels, 4 or 5 years after the Czechoslovakia was free. There were also missiles in Bulgaria and one other state as well. So it shows that these various nations were in fact pre-prepared for this takedown with leaders who are in fact still owing their allegiance to the communist cause.
And so communism really is not dead, and anybody who believes there is, I would simply ask, if communism is dead, why do 1.25 billion people live in communist China today? Roger, anything else you want to ask?
Yes, I also asked, you mentioned FEMA earlier, and maybe you have more up-to-date figures, but at least about 3 years old now, was with all the gross inefficiencies we know of the government providing benevolence, you know, only 30% goes to feed the ever-hungry mouths. Well, I recall that FEMA had an ultra-low figure of 6% of their expenditures that actually went to help anybody. I expect their budget's gone through the roof since 9/11 and perhaps has even dropped to a lower figure.
Right, well, let's get Joel's thoughts on that. And thanks very much for calling, Roger. Did you hear, of course, Roger's point? Is FEMA really preparing to take care of us? He suggests only about 6% of the budget, fairly large budget, at least in the past, was really designed to take care of people.
In fact, they've stockpiled very little supplies. There are stockpiles of some medical and other emergency hospitalization teams and other things, but, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. If there's a massive attack, it will help. If there's a terrorist attack, that's really all FEMA is preparing for. What the majority of the budget is going into are control mechanisms, bunker systems. FEMA is building bunkers, hardened headquarters to be able to, what they're calling command centers.
That's for the elite and their families?
Well, obviously they're going to be protected themselves, and our own government is building a lot of high-tech shelters, especially one for the vice president now under the Naval Observatory. These people know that something's coming, and yet they continue to refuse to warn American people to build shelters.
Okay, fine. Well, now, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get copies of the World Affairs Brief?
Yes, the World Affairs Brief is my weekly news analysis service. Comes out every Friday. You can go to my website, which is www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and you can see all of the daily posts from my two very capable researchers who put up the key issues of the news, and I will be picking from those things and putting together my analysis. So what you read on the front page are their commentaries to me on why these things are important, and so it makes a great news site to go to in the morning or any time during the day and check on the day's news. We often beat Drudge Report in some of the top stories, and so it's very beneficial. On the right-hand side, you'll find a lot of information about government cover-ups and things that indicate that we have collusion between government and other conspiratorial forces for a globalist objective, and I try to put out very credible information about that based upon the cover-ups that they've engaged in so far. And on the left-hand side of the web page, you can subscribe directly by clicking on the subscribe button. You can see past issues of the World Affairs Brief, the archives from 2003 on back. So there's lots on that site, and I might also say if you don't have access to the web, there's an 800 number or a toll-free number you can call to get printed the latest print edition of the World Affairs Brief as a sample. And that's 877, that's toll-free, 877-518-5888.
One more time, that telephone number?
That's 877-518-5888.
All right, well, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, I think we need to really look carefully in the next few months. The lead story on the World Affairs Brief is about China, Taiwan, and the U.S., lots of saber-rattling going out there, a major seven-carrier task force, a show of force there to presumably counter a lot of the military maneuvers of the Chinese aimed vis-a-vis Taiwan. I do not think that anyone's intending to take Taiwan, but I think it's important that because the communists have set their foot down and said, we're not going to allow any independence, if Chen Shui-bian, the president of Taiwan, were to make some declaration, China would be forced to attack sooner than what they want to. They don't want to attack until they can coordinate with the Russian attack on the West. That's when they intend to take Taiwan, and not until then. They don't want to jeopardize the 2008 Olympics that they've got scheduled and all the propaganda value of that. But there's definitely something in the wind, and they are jockeying and maneuvering out there in the Far East.
And, of course, the Chinese have said that we're going to have six or seven of our carrier task forces over there in the Straits before long.
Yes, and the Straits, you know, is 120 miles wide. It's a lot wider than the English Channel, so this is no small invasion if you're going to travel 120 miles in open boats over to Taiwan. There's a lot of room if you don't have air superiority to get sunk. You know, Taiwan is getting submarines, and if the U.S. carrier task force were out there, they would simply have to react much stronger. And I do point out that China has a lot of missile batteries there, intermediate to short-range missiles that can reach Taiwan or any U.S. aircraft carriers.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, and let me recommend that you go to his website, worldaffairsbrief.com, and, of course, get his newsletter. You'll find it's fascinating. Thanks so much for being with us again, Joel.
My pleasure, as always, Dan.
Good night. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Joel Skousen. Hope you enjoyed his commentary. And, of course, this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty, my ministry, is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you who listen to us on a regular basis for your help as we, of course, purchase a time on radio stations all across America. And we have about 60 outlets every week of radio, shortwave, internet, and of course the satellite, and we have an opportunity for people to hear us. We're gradually expanding as we develop that base of support, and rather than just go out and get on as many stations as we can, we want to make sure that we're able to keep doing what we're doing and not have to cut back. So if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, economic battlefield, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video, you need to get that. We'll give you an overview of exactly what's going on. It's a historical overview based upon my 40 years of research, and I think you'll find it fascinating. I know it's touched many lives, and I hope it will touch your life as well. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, the video, the audio tape, or get all three and copy the video and audio tape and circulate it, because you can help to change people's lives as well. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, that's the May-June newsletter that tells you who Osama bin Laden really is. And why it would be that after President Clinton had ordered the CIA on two occasions to take Osama bin Laden out to execute him or capture him, the CIA refused. Why would they do something that foolish when, of course, Osama bin Laden was planning to attack America, had already declared war on America and killed a number of Americans? Well, it should be an interesting newsletter. I hope you'll enjoy it. Telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. To understand the spiritual aspect of what's going on, let me suggest the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Either the 4-hour or the 10-hour version, both are available by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. You'll want, of course, to get the new video of the Gods of Entertainment, Carol Matriciana's excellent video, which actually shows the clip of Mel Gibson's interview by Diane Sawyer, when Diane Sawyer asked Mel Gibson, well, but what are these dark forces you say that are out there? What do they want? And Mel Gibson's answer is worth the entire cost of the video. But she goes into what Hollywood's real aim is. It's not really simply to make money. There are other agendas far more dangerous to the survival of Western civilization. That's the Gods of Entertainment. Certainly our video, Megiddo, we recommend strongly. Megiddo, The March to Armageddon by Chris Pinto. Going into the secret societies that created the wars of the last century. My video, Iraq, The Untold Story. You can get it by itself or with a syllabus that gives you all the documentation on the fact that dropping the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki weren't necessary because the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months, but there are people out there who really want to see as much death and devastation as possible. And until we understand the essence of the evil we face, it's very difficult to understand much of what's going on in the world today. And so, if you believe, as I do, that we are involved in a spiritual battle, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining with us in this epic struggle. Go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. Tell people about our internet sites, about our shortwave, where we can be heard 4 hours a day. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.